You're listening to Fusion Patrol, a listener-supported podcast. Each week, we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series, movie, or audio and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol.
I'm Eugene.
And I am John. And tonight we're looking at two more episodes of Neo Ultra Q. Tonight we're looking at episode 9, the Tokyo Protocol, and episode 10, Thalagon at Michiru. And we'll start with the Tokyo Protocol. In an effort to curb global warming, the world has adopted the Tokyo Protocol, strict binding curbs on greenhouse gas emissions that include crippling economic sanctions if they are exceeded. The protocols are harsh. And in an effort to avoid exceeding them, Japan has implemented a system of shutting down all power in an area when it exceeds the daily allotment. Under these conditions, people swelter in inadequately cooled rooms, and businesses are being crushed out of existence. One such man runs a small factory, which will soon be going out of business. But then, the monsters arrive! They are called Prana. And they have attached themselves to all the smokestacks and other greenhouse gas-producing buildings. They benignly thrive on greenhouse gases, purifying the air, allowing Japan to roar forward as an industrial powerhouse. Prosperity for all and a disposable economy and mindset soon return to Japan as all the sins of their industrial output are absorbed by the prana. And then, the prana seem to get sick and may die, or worse. Everyone is very worried. Could this be the end of the good times for Japan's economy? No, because the prana are really just blooming like giant flowers, and the industrial good times can continue. Banzai! The end. Well, this was an no team of our heroes in this one.
Yeah, not at all.
Not a sign of them in any way, shape, or form. Not even a driving down the street going...
the door being open and having more than a couple of customers in it.
Ooh, yep, nothing. Yeah, nothing.
Yep.
What'd you think of this episode?
Well, you know, interesting idea, but the kaiju showing up and sucking up all the bad stuff and then mankind just simply says, oh, cool, we can just continue on, but we're going to, like, put the pedal to it and really work on the folly of mankind and see if we can level up our hubris and just, you know, have a good go at it. All except for that one little kid who just, wanted to play baseball with his friends, who kept running off in the middle of the night or just going to other continents to open up coffee shops or whatever they prepared.
Yeah.
And then when the megaflora explodes onto the scene, everyone's running around and very super happy, except for the kid.
Yeah.
And then it ends.
And I want to say, as I was watching this in particular, I was thinking, I think they're going to land this. They finally got one that they're going to land because they're actually making a pretty good metaphor for how mankind operates.
Oh yeah, it was excellent.
We have a problem, And we caused it ourselves, and now we can't live with the solution. And, you know, nobody likes the medicine you have to take. And
right.
then, and of course, they don't really do anything about it. I mean,
no,
what they're doing is incredibly superficial.
Yep.
And then a magic bullet comes along and everyone just goes, okay, problem solved. Let's really put the pedal to the metal. And yeah, okay, that absolutely fits. And they start throwing things away.
Yes.
You know, like
yes.
the dad starts chucking the kid's baseball. So, I'll just buy a new one. Times are great. Everything's going big. The economy's booming. Yay.
Yep.
Team, just throw that old chunk out. And his friends are all, his friends are all like in fancy baseball uniforms or just go out and play and new gloves and stuff. Why don't you get a new glove? We can just, you know, hey, it's like, I like my old glove. And he is representing, you know, this kid's kind of representing a sort of view towards, you know, that's wasteful.
Right.
This is not sustainable.
Yeah.
This is
conservative growth. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the picture, and he being young, he's sort of got it that this just can't possibly be right. And then,
right.
you know, the creatures start getting really ill. They look like they're grossly sick. They look like they're dying.
Well, they didn't look so great in the first place, but yeah. Big
no,
meatballs that pulsated.
Yeah. And they, it's like the girl who works at the Japanese government comes in and says, well, you know, they're the thing. And scientists say we should probably stop doing what we're doing. And all the politicians are like, let's take a wait and see attitude.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see if it gets worse or if it gets better. You know, it might get worse, so why not just let it continue? I mean, it is so on the nose in many ways. And then, of course, you know, now everyone sees it. The problem is these things are just disgusting, and they look like they're going to die. And if they do, then all the factories and, oh, my gosh. And, you know, kind of the impact of what might happen to them. They might go back to the way it was. It might be worse than the way it was. It might be.
Right,
you know,
they might have to turn the air conditioning off again.
Yeah, and then, boom, they blow up trees, fireworks everywhere, and I guess those things are also eating all the stuff, so everyone's like, yay, let's go, keep it up, we're all happy, yay, yay, yay. And it's just like, they just don't land it. They were so close. They were so close to telling a meaningful story. And I guess maybe I was expecting them to, I don't know,
have an
say
ending.
Something at the end? Have the boy say something? His look is the ending, right? He's looking at this like, this is not the solution, people. And that's it. So it was close. And the one thing I do like about it is I really do appreciate the fact that this one does not have our regulars in it, because this one's kind of hard to come back from next week. You know, it's like, I think I mentioned it before, these episodes, a lot of them feel like they need to be in separate universes.
Yeah, I think a lot of these are just simply, you know, they're one-off stories about different Earths.
Uh-huh.
They do exist in their own little realm. So yeah,
and
not having the regulars in there really does help.
It does, because, you know, we get to see what, you know, how this world is dealing with this. But I love the fact that they have a weather girl
doing
greenhouse gas emission.
Yeah, forecast.
Weather forecast. You know, like, well, Tokyo's at 90% today. And it's, you know, everyone's keeping up on it. It's like, oh, we got to do our part. But are they really doing their part? Is anybody working on any alternate energy? Is there anything going on?
No, they're just trying to conserve.
They're just trying to cut back a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that. well. They're not doing it well enough. I did appreciate the fact that she's still on screen talking about Tokyo. Tokyo's at 90. Oh, it's at 100. And then all and then the click. Power in the city dies.
Yep.
Can't allow that to go over because the sanctions would be crippling. I just, that's probably the funniest part of this. It's like, yeah, right. Like the Americans would agree to that.
Yep.
Because that's the setup at the beginning. It says all nations of the world have got to live with these curbs. It's like, yeah. Well,
yeah,
only the Japanese are actually going to honor this.
Uh-huh.
You know, everyone else is going to be slipping this stuff out, faking the readings and whatnot, but Japan is just dutifully like, throw the switch.
Yep. Yeah, this is yet another episode that just feels like there's a beginning, a middle, and then they just decided to pull the plug on it.
Yeah. You know,
not to make a pun there, but...
It had so much more promise in a way, except it was also too slow.
Yeah, if they could have sped it up, they actually might have had, you know, more of a story to it. But I guess you're supposed to be left questioning or come up with your own answers or something like that for this.
Yeah,
it's
I think so.
Okay, fine. My answer is I want more story.
I want the rest. I want the ending to this.
Yes.
Do those flowers turn into human-eating creatures and need fertilizer from the dead bodies or...
Right. What's going to happen with those flowers? They're going to make more seeds, I'm going to assume, and they're going to either stay on Earth and make more of the flowers. Eventually, it'll be nothing but flowers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll have to be... like burning tires in order to make black smoke for them to consume, or they'll turn on us or something like that.
They'll actually turn us into greenhouse gas emitting pets or slaves. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, it's going to turn out that they're, you know, 100% non biodegradable and toxic because they live
when
on nothing.
It all comes out. Yeah.
Right. Or they just sit there and nothing happens to them because they're inorganic. So you just have these massive mountains of dead polluting or pollutant-eating plants that you have to deal with, and you can't. You know, what if you can't even burn them? You just bury them and throw them out at sea until the ocean gets full?
We know how that works with whales when you try to get rid of them.
Oh, yeah.
With dynamite.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it is a strange. It's a strange story, and this one more than any episode in the past, I feel cheated. I feel like somebody had something to say, and he was gonna say it. Damn it, and.
Then the producer says, no, not on this show. You can't have an ending. At least not one that makes any sense.
No, yeah. Yeah. Like, what, the guy running the little factory, I mean, he's on the brink of going out of business, and it's not really a factory per se. It looks like it's more of a machine shop.
Yeah, I think it's a machine shop.
Apart from the electricity that he's using, which is not coming from him, it's coming from the power plant,
right?
What's his greenhouse footprint? How is it affecting his business? Why is it affecting his business? Is it just because he might lose power like everybody else?
Yeah. Yep. And perhaps if he has any solvents or other expendable items that he'd have to use, oils, things like that, then
okay, that's possible.
Those might
yep.
be difficult to get a hold of or get rid of.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty much he doesn't have a lot in the way of carbon emissions. I mean, unless you're going to, you know, start looking at the stock that he purchases, you know, for every ton of steel he buys, he also has to buy a carbon footprint offset
that
allows the plants to create the steel.
Yeah, the ideas that they're presenting here about how Japan goes about curbing their greenhouse gas emissions, as far as I can tell, it is nothing but if we hit our number, we turn it all off.
Yeah.
And that is such an unnuanced...
Well, also, before the power went out, when they were having the pre-Kaiju intervention here, you saw the political guys working on their policies and stuff, their procedures and whatnot. They're all sweating. They've got a fan. Well, you know, they got their paper fans
there, yeah.
They're fanning each other with and stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously there's not a lot of electricity being consumed, yet the Tokyo Protocol is about to go into effect to curb further consumption. So it's not working. Even trying to reduce your amount of electricity you're using is not helping.
Yeah. And of course, what do? We cut from the scene where the kaiju arrive and they're all sweating, working on policies and in their short sleeves and ties off and fans blowing and all that stuff. And then immediately thereafter, it's like 1 month later, something like that. We cut back to them. They're all back into their suits.
Oh, you can see the condensation blowing out of the air conditioning.
The air conditioning blowing all that. It's like, turn the air conditioning up. It's like
getting a cold, turn it down. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure which way he meant there. You know, I always have trouble with that because you can say turn the air conditioning up and turn the air conditioning down to mean both things either way. Either you want more air conditioning
you want the temperature down. The amount of blowing air to go down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's weird. The other thing I thought was interesting is it appears that these creatures are only in Japan.
Yeah, I believe so.
Because, which is very border specific of the kaiju. But it feels like in the negotiations, the other countries are like, how are you doing this? How are you curbing your emissions so effectively? And you're thinking, has not one of them seen a picture of Tokyo?
Yeah, exactly. Somehow they've had a complete media blackout for months.
Yes. And man, those guys, the Japanese government, they are some of the world's best negotiators because did you see what that deal was they got from China?
No, I didn't notice that.
Pandas. I think they said
34
pandas at the Ueno Zoo.
That's right. They just started to reproduce like crazy.
No, I don't think it were reproducing. I think China was farming panda diplomacy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know how China does that thing where they loan you pandas when they want a favor from you or they
right.
do something. I think that's what they were getting at. I'm not strictly sure. I think it was a dig at panda diplomacy, but I...
Okay, that could be.
It was a very odd thing to throw out there of all the... You know, it was immediately after they talked about countries wanting to make deals for, and then, well, let's hang on to this for a little while and see what we can work out. And then the next thing they come up with is like, oh, we got a bunch of pandas now at the zoo. You're like, okay... You guys really suck at your job. Yeah. And you know, why are the kaiju not going somewhere? Is it a visa issue? Can they not get a passport?
I think it was like the countryside.
Uh-huh. Could be that.
Yeah.
Could be that. I don't know. It's just a strange...
Yeah, it was a different one, all right.
We say that every week, too.
Yeah, good point.
It was different. It was, this is definitely not a traditional show. Do you have anything else on?
No, not really.
Protocol?
Nope.
I do think it's funny that, you know, Tokyo and Kyoto, and which are kind of both major cities, because the Kyoto Protocol, which has no teeth, versus the Tokyo Protocol, which is the newer one and has teeth. So kind of like Japan's capital moving from Kyoto to Tokyo. Anyway,
yeah, maybe.
All right, well then let's take a look at episode 10. Thalmagon and Michu. Episode synopsis. Michiru is a young high jump athlete who has tragically been struck down in an accident and will never walk again. Her life has fallen apart, and the boy she loves, Yuma, is no longer interested in her. There are other high jump girls in the sea for him. Gina has been called in his capacity as a counselor, to try to help Michiru deal with her loss. Thalmagon is a monster born of the scrap heap, and he has a kind heart. And when he sees Michiru fall out of her wheelchair, he assists her. A charm, which is a token of love from Yuma, is broken when she fell, and she's upset. Thalmagon has the ability to put things back together, almost. He hasn't quite perfected it. He tries to repair the charm, rather unsuccessfully. Michiru tells him that's not good enough, and he needs to practice. So practice he does, but it makes him ill. Eventually, though, he succeeds in repairing the charm. Michiru is happy, but only until Yuma makes it clear to her that he doesn't love her. He only pities her. She runs away, or more accurately, she wheels away. Thalmagon tries to convince her that she can still be an athlete, just a wheelchair athlete. And this does not sit well with her either. She once again falls from her wheelchair, but this time Thalmagon puts his everything into it and fixes Michiru's legs, but at the cost of his own life. Jean, who's been searching for Michiru, witnesses it. The next day, Michiru is running and happy, and she returns to see Thalmagon, unaware that he died fixing her legs. When Jean tells her, she is plunged back into the grief of loss. Nonetheless, she returns to her competitions in memory of Thalmagon. Okay.
I was stunned that this episode actually had an ending.
Yeah, it did. It did. I think it ended in the right spot, more or less.
And this one, they actually, when they rolled the credits, it was over white.
Yes, or clouds, I think.
Clouds, yeah, it was clouds. It was over something clouds. Bright, not black like it usually is.
Yeah, odd. But what did you think of the episode, apart from the fact, what had an ending?
Well, it... You know, kind of shows typical ultra narrow view that especially youth can get when they're pursuing something, you know, be it a an athletic career or a suitor, that you just can't see the forest for the trees. Uh-huh. You know, it's just completely not realizing that this guy is just a total piece of crap, and you're much better off without him.
Yeah,
you know, and go about your way trying to, you know, be stronger than you think you are, and overcome this limitation that's been put upon you.
Yeah.
Become a better person because of it.
Yeah. Now this one has Jean in it, not the other two, but it has Jean. Uh-huh. And he's in there in the right capacity.
Yep.
He's a counselor. She needs counseling. We don't see a lot of it, but that's the mom calls him in to try to help her. And this is an interesting It's an interesting scene where he says to Mom, you know, there's really only one way out of it. There is, you know, there's denial and then bargaining. I don't remember what the stages of grief are, but he rattles off the stages of grief. He said, and you know, that's, and then finally acceptance. And then he goes, well, there is another way. Subjecting them to another extreme trauma. But as she's young, I wouldn't recommend that. And I'm thinking, wow, have we got a little bit of foreshadowing there going?
Yeah, no, not at all. None whatsoever there. He's just throwing it out there just for the heck of it.
Yeah, any therapist is going to pop that one out there to the president.
Oh, yeah.
Some other loss, you know, might snap him out of it. Or it might snap him into a different one. And then, of course, it doesn't really go there. Right?
So it wasn't truly foreshadowing. He just literally threw it out there.
He just literally threw it. Well, yes and no. I mean, she does suffer another trauma.
Yes.
The loss of Thalmagon. And she's, you know, plunged back into the grief cycle through him, through his death. But that's not what snaps her out of the grief cycle for the other one. What snaps her out of that is the fact that she's cured.
Trey, she can run again. Exactly.
So, problem solved, except now she's got a different one. And
I think
then that one's just sort of batted away by Jin. Well, you know, he'd have wanted to see you smile.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then next scene, she's off doing her high jump stuff again and kind of remembering him. So it kind of gives the illusion that, you know, she's doing this because of him. But it kind of makes a mockery of Jin's grief process about the death of Thalmagon in this case. So it is a weird one. And once again, we do see that Japanese girls can be really, really nasty pieces of work.
Yeah, as shallow and superficial as you could possibly think.
Yeah.
And you know, Japanese boys, you know, as much of a stereotype as you can possibly get with that, too. It's like, oh, you can't do the thing that I liked. Well, you know, heck with you. I'm going to go find somebody who can. Just, you know, run off.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to give Yuma a pass. That was kind of an obvious one. But, you know, we don't know what the circumstances are there. I mean, we do, but we don't, right? We don't know how long Yuma has been hospitalized. Michiro. Yeah. We don't know how long she's been gone. Yuma's a teenage boy. He's out there on the track. He likes the cut of her jib. You know, making some moves for her. And then, you know, for all we know, she was in the hospital for 6 months. He's moved on.
Yeah, he's already found something.
He's a teenage boy.
Shiny.
He's found another cute girl and off, and they're getting along well. We don't know what the circumstances are there. We really don't. It looks all the world like he's just ignoring her because she's in a wheelchair, but we don't actually know that. And
true. Well, I apologize to Yuma then.
Yeah, I think he's still a piece of, because he was, you know, trying to, I think he, it's implied that he was kind of encouraging her to get back to her running and her training schedule.
Yeah, and you know, and also
his new girlfriend rips that one a new one.
Right, and wants him to tell her the news, quote unquote.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's yeah. No, I'm referring mostly to Michiru and her, you know, strange monster rescues you. I can understand why she might be freaked out about that, not pissed off, right, and angry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No sign of shock whatsoever.
No.
When she realizes this is a monster that has manhandled her back into her wheelchair right?
This, yeah.
That is not an issue. Her thing is like, I didn't want your help.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my thingy has been broken. And then the creature tries to, well, first off, her lunch is spilled, which is apparently lemons and honey.
Yeah.
That is not a dish I've heard of before, but okay.
No, I haven't heard of that one either.
And it is a great scene because they are sliced lemons in a container with honey. And yep. They have fallen on the ground and the lemon slices and the honey is on the ground and the lemon slices also. And Thalmagon instinctively kind of just goes to it and does these little thing and it reassembles the lemon. It puts the honey in its own little puddle and it reassembles the lemon, except that the lemon is obviously still sliced.
Yeah, there's like bits of the rind missing and whatever.
Yeah, I think it's inverted or something.
Yeah.
Every other slice or something. So he gets it back together, but he doesn't get it right.
Not quite right, exactly.
Not quite right. And Midshitter then suddenly is like, oh, you can fix things. Then here, fix this. Okay. Nice little Thalmagon's like, and it's, you know, wrong.
Just a mass of pearls glued together.
And then she gets ticked off at him again.
Right.
It's like, not, hey, that was amazing. Nice try. It's, that's not good enough.
Exactly.
This is the point where you just sort of push her off of a set of stairs or something and watch her bounce her way down. She is so, I know she's grieving, but no, I'm sorry. But Thalmagon doesn't have to put up with that. He could just go somewhere else and find some other girl who has something broken.
Right, probably, maybe, I don't know. But, you know, he's got very narrow vision as well. It's like, oh, somebody talked to me. Yeah. They didn't run away screaming, so yes.
Well, Jin didn't run away screaming either when he went to talk to him. I mean, apparently he just lives at the garbage, the scrapyard.
Repairing stuff, yeah. Or trying to.
I guess trying to. I mean, what? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand the whole concept behind no one seems to bat an eye about this relatively grotesque creature wandering around
sweet sour
in its little high-pitched voice. I mean, they successfully convey you should feel for Thalmagon. Thalmagon's nice. Thalmagon is simple. He's trying to help.
Yep.
He's getting abuse, but he just seems to love it.
Yeah, well, once again, he's getting attention, and sometimes any attention is better than none.
Better than none, yeah.
Yeah, that's not good, but yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he was hoping to land a sweet deal like Brethren did.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you could go into business with Brethren.
That'd be perfect. Yeah.
I repair clothes that have been damaged and you clean them afterwards.
Yep. If only they had met. Thalmagon and Brethren together again.
But they could be in different universes, so.
True, yeah. True.
Because Brethren's world has been washed clean, so there's no need for any of this stuff.
Well, really. Things still break.
And it's true. Like that girl's legs.
Yes, or whatever was wrong with her. Yeah.
To be fair, I knew that one was coming.
Oh, yeah, of course. Anything like that. So that's,
you can
that's
fix
how
things.
This is going to end up.
I love the fact that she's like, oh, you can fix things. Here, fix this stupid charm from the guy who scorned me. As opposed to, oh, fix my legs.
Well, yeah.
Maybe of course, that would have been funny. See, I mean, she had a leg on her, a foot on her ear or something. And
right, exactly. They're on backwards or something
you
like that.
You got it wrong.
Yeah.
Try harder. Now I can't even ride around in my wheelchair because my legs bend backwards.
Exactly.
Or have to ride facing backwards.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, it's shallow. And it's kind of, I don't know, Gene is sort of forced in here, but he is at least forced in an appropriate capacity.
Yep.
I'd still say this is one of the better ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like I said, it had a real ending.
You know, these two episodes have been...
Didn't have much of a moral other than, you know, careful what you help people with might destroy you.
Yeah, I think they were going for the whole grief angle, but I just, it didn't quite, nail that one.
Yeah.
But this 9 and 10, Tokyo Protocol and this one have probably been the best two. And I'm not saying that like they're great, but, you know, one had an enormous potential and the other one had an ending. So between them, there's almost a whole story there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Bop.
Somehow merge them together. You almost have a winning episode there. Maybe.
Valmagon, Michiru, and the Tokyo Protocol.
Yeah, I wonder how that one would work out.
If they'd get an extra 5 minutes out of it, and then
probably
still end it.
Yeah, with a kid looking questioningly up at the sky. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And I was wondering, wow, was that really deep or was that just crap?
There is that.
Yeah.
There is
pretentious
we are still
much?
In that, we are still in that zone where you just can't quite tell whether or not they're really going for it or whether they just are trying to pretend like they're going. Not pretend.
Yeah.
That's not the right word for it. It's like I was saying about the new Outer Limits and the new Twilight Zone. They try too hard to be too deep.
Yeah.
They're too self-important. And
they just never get out of the shallow end.
Yeah. And that's kind of what's happening here. And then Tokyo Protocol has been the only one that's come close to landing some sort of merry or social commentary or something. And the others have just been weird.
Yes, I'm not sure what I just saw.
Do you have anything else on these two?
No, I'm afraid not.
I do not either. But what I do have is a dream. I have a dream.
What is this? I dare
ask. Dream is that next time when we look at Neo Ultra Q, we will be looking at the unnamed episodes 11 and 12, because they don't have them in front of me.
I can tell you what they are.
Okay.
The Algoth Democracy.
Okay.
And Hominis Dignitatis. I think that's
right. Close enough. It's probably not in, not in English anyway.
Hominis Dignitatis.
Thalmagon and Michiru was in Kana, so it was Thalmagon to Michiru. So it was phonetically, those are the brand names anyway. But what's important about episodes 11 and 12 about Neo Ultra Q, and what my dream is that those are the last.
There is
two
no episode 13.
Episode. There is no episode 13. We are done with Neo Ultra Q, and it has been a bit of a slog. I
uphill
gotta say.
Slog.
Uphill slog on a snowboard.
Yeah. Yeah,
in the
exactly.
Summer.
That's a good way of putting it.
On rocks.
Yes.
So it's been a bit rough. But we'll see. They still have two episodes to go to actually get one from beginning to end. They've done it now. They got an actual story with an ending in episode 10. They had a story in 9 that had a point and no ending. And in 10, they didn't have much point, but they had an ending. They've got two more tries. Two more tries. I'm rooting for you, Neo Ultra Q. I'm rooting for you. Go out on a high.
Yep.
You can do this. You can do this. Yeah. John, thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been, it's been a pleasure.
An experience. It's been an experience.
Yeah, there you go, experience.
Listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol. You've been listening to Fusion Patrol. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, we hope you'll consider supporting us at buymeacoffee.com/fusionpatrol or patreon.com/fusionpatrol. For our monthly Patreon subscribers, we're currently running a special series on Babylon 5. Come join the conversation and find other content at fusionpatrol.com. And we're back on social media, where you can also follow us on Mastodon and the Fediverse. Our address is podcast@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf. This has been a Lone Locust production. Next time on Fusion Patrol, we take a trip back in time to post-war Japan, a time when the country was at its absolute lowest. And then, as Steve Jobs used to say, there is just one more thing. Godzilla. Next week, we take a look at the sleeper international hit movie Godzilla Minus One. Come join the conversation on Fusion Patrol.